The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it.
Alex, thanks for joining us once again, brother. How are you?
Good, man. Long time no speak. I haven't seen you for a while.
It's so different seeing you in a nighttime setting.
Yeah. Well, it does get, you know, we're not a flat earthers here, mate. So, you know, the world does get dark on this side too.
Where are you? Or is that a secret?
Let's keep it a secret. It's somewhere that's on a similar hemisphere, but on the other side.
What's going on in the Bitcoin world, mate? It's I find it so fascinating. Like every day, every week, there seems to be so much happening, and I often think about you and your journey in this, and how long you've been a part of this reality, and I sometimes put myself in your shoes to a point, going, what is it like for somebody that's been in the Bitcoin space for this long, seeing so much innovation, so much adoption, so much noise, so much, is the word corruption the right word to use in this? And just, it seems like a game of chess. And would I be wrong in saying that it's a game of chess that's playing out on a global level at the moment?
I mean, you'd be right in saying that. It's like a game of 4D, 5D chess. You know, people are orienting themselves in all sorts of ways. You're right about the corruption word. It's not maybe the right one. It's like kind of confusion and attacks and disagreements and all this sort of stuff. And it's I must admit, I've sort of got to the point where I've almost, I mean, maybe I've just reached another version of Bitcoin Nirvana, where I'm like so numb to the noise that I just don't even know what the fuck's going on anymore.
Did you ever expect it to be this? And again, maybe the word volatile isn't correct, but to be such an epic story.
In some ways, yes, but I think the epicness of the story is less about Bitcoin. It's more about the stage where the world is at. Because if you think about it, like everyone and everything's gone fucking crazy, right? Like, you know, we're sort of living in the age of hysteria. Like, no matter what happens, you know, these days we've got AI hysteria now. So like every day a new fucking AI tool drops, you know, and AI is going to take over the world apparently and stuff like that. And we can talk about that actually, because I've been toying around with that for the last few months. But you know, so you got that. Then you've got like hysteria about politics. Then you got hysteria about like the climate. Then you got hysteria about this. And like, I don't know. In some ways, the only thing. I mean, the Bitcoin ecosystem is also hysterical. You know, it's one of the most hysterical ones. But Bitcoin itself seems to be the only thing that you know, is not hysterical in that sense. Like, it's just, you know, every 10 minutes there's another block. You know, you look back, it's still 21 million Bitcoin. Like, you know, the rules, the consensus is still there. So it's kind of like this this anchor in a world that's just continually like going increasingly mad. And I know that piece gives me comfort, but I think we almost spoke about this last time, right? When we did a pod, I was like saying that I took a step back a little bit, and you know, you sort of get to the point where I know you've seen it all a couple times, and it's like, I don't know. There's a funny thing happening now. Obviously, this these ordinals and inscriptions. Have you seen these? Sort of everyone's gone crazy about this stuff.
Yeah, I read an article about it last night, actually. What is it called? BRC20 or BT? BRC20?
Yeah, I think it's BRC20. I don't know what the fuck that is. But so from what I understand, and I'm so distant out of this, I've been out of the loop, but basically people are, I guess, have figured out a way to embed imagery, I guess, on the blockchain. But, you know, that's extremely expensive because block space is expensive. That's how you get the fee market. And what seems to be happening is, you know, the BRC20 spec has been designed in such a way that it's like, it's excessively bloated. So, you know, you could do BRC20, but you could do it a lot more efficiently to save block space, but it's not done that way. It's done in the most bloated way possible. So, you know, this sort of tells you that it's, you know, the people that are sort of driving this stuff and promoting it, et cetera, they're less interested in the marginal utility of what these inscriptions are, because I mean, I don't think there's utility in posting fucking images on a blockchain, to be honestly, like, or posting data on a blockchain. I've never believed that. You know, maybe some things that are really, really valuable from a data perspective, like a timestamp for, you know, an action, like, for example, I sold my house to this person, or I sold my business to this person, or stock moved from one person to another, and you want to have a globally verifiable timestamp on that. But you can do that with a couple bits of data, you know, for example, but that could be like a way to have almost like use Bitcoin as a digital notary, you know what I mean? But to kind of store big chunks of data and stuff like that, Bitcoin's, you know, base layer has never really been designed for that. It's not optimized for that. So what it seems like to me from the outside is that you've got a bunch of people who are trying to prove a point by congesting the network and pointing out and saying, ha, we broke Bitcoin. But the funny part about it is like, Bitcoin's not broken. Like, you know, if you purposely try and spam the network, all you're going to do is like pay a shitload in fees. The miners are going to collect those fees. So like in fact, I think there was a few blocks there for a moment where the fees that the miners were earning was actually more than the block reward. So the miners were fucking making bank. So what that tells you is like Bitcoin's working properly. You know, there seems to be a coordinated spam attack. It is hurting some people. So people who do want to, for example, send a transaction on the base chain, they're going to be paying a hell of a lot more. People who need to open or close a Lightning channel, they're going to be paying a shitload. And, you know, unfortunately, some people who have a Lightning channel force closed, for example, they're going to lose a bunch of sats, you know, when that happens, because the fee rate is so high. So it'll just get put in the next block and they'll pay a shitload of sats for closing out that channel. So there is some collateral damage. But the thing is, if you look at it, there was a couple of days where the fee rate went like to $30 or $40 or whatever it was. And you know, now it's dropped back to about $10. So what that tells you is that you can only like sustain an attack for so long until you've spent millions of dollars because that's essentially what was happening. People were spending millions of dollars inscribing these fucking images, and that those inscription costs were just going to the miners in terms of mining fees. And then the idiots on the other end who were like buying and speculating on those inscriptions, just like the other NFTs that were on Ethereum and all this sort of stuff. Now they're left holding something that they need to sell. And like, you know, I don't know if I've said this to you before or someone else, but you know, NFTs are the fucking one of the biggest stupidities, because the more NFTs that come out, the more you get, you know, a horizontal spread in the marketplace, meaning that there's no liquidity. There's only one of each NFT. So as soon as the next one pops up, the value of the previous one drops because no one gives a fuck. It's like the next shiny thing. So the people who go and spend a bunch of Bitcoin buying an NFT, even if it's an inscription, end up with basically a worthless inscription on the Bitcoin network that if they want to move later, I think will cost excessive amounts of money. So then no one wants to buy it. So it's like you just wasted your fucking money. And you probably sent it to some scammer who like decided to create a Bitcoin inscription. So anyway, long story short is it seems like you know, an attempted attack to congest the network. And once again, it looks like it's failed. Have we seen something like this before? Yes. In 2017, there was attempted attacks by the Bitcoin Cash, BSV, there was a big miner at the time, Bitmain, who tried to attack the Bitcoin network and just like spam with transactions to congest the network to prove that Bitcoin wasn't scalable. But, you know, Bitcoin got through that battle. It got harder. It got stronger. And it's going to get through this again. And, you know, same story over and over again.
What I find fascinating is still some of the larger players. And when I talk about players, you know, you've got Michael Saylor out there. You've got the president of El Salvador. They seem to be continuing, purchasing, playing, believing in Bitcoin and it seems to be that these people, and I guess like yourself, are still rock solid in their foundation and their belief and the future of the monetary system. And Cathie Wood is another one. And I wanted to ask you whether you've seen where do you think we're at in this cycle with these people? I mean, surely there's got to be institutions out there, different governments looking at El Salvador, looking at Cathie Wood from ARC and looking at Michael Saylor and others in this space. And would they be shaking their head? Would they be scratching their head? Would they be like, what the fuck? Like, tell me about that sort of ecosystem that's out there with these sort of big players.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one with the big players. So there's a company out of New York called NYDIG, and the founder there is a guy called Ross Stevens, who's like he's an ex Wall Street guy. He's an awesome guy. You know, solid. He's become a solid Bitcoiner. Basically, like he's an avid reader, and he's you know, they've been working on the institutional side to, you know, help larger scale, whether it's like family offices or investment funds and all this sort of stuff, add Bitcoin to their balance sheet in some capacity, banks, this, that, like they were one of the biggest lenders to miners and everything like that. So I know that they've run into trouble trying to help institutions on board because like the way that the government and the state, basically the, you know, and when I say the state, I mean a blend of the government, the banks, the central banks, and all that sort of stuff, like that apparatus, right? The regulators, et cetera. The way they can try and inhibit a lot of this is by trying to make it difficult for businesses to use Bitcoin, particularly from a payments perspective. That's probably where the greatest friction point is. And this is where someone like Saylor and, you know, Bukele for that matter are very important, because what they're doing is, you know, they've latched on, and this has been very smart from Saylor's position, is he's just been pitching it as property. It's a fucking asset. You see him say that word asset so many times, right?
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.